Friends, the man you're about to hear on the Bible Institute of the Air broadcast needs no introduction because he's been with me so many times and is always so willing and ready to help us and to inform you, the listening audience, as to the status quo here in Washington. I refer to Congressman James B. Ott from Santa Ana, California. Good morning, Congressman. It's nice to have you with us again.
Good morning, Dr. Burpos. Nice to be on the air again with you.
Thank you. I want to ask you, we want to pose two questions. In your newsletter that you so graciously send me each time you put one out, you wrote an extensive article on sex in education. And I read that verbatim over the air, and we put out thousands of them because the people wanted your words of wisdom. Would you like to discuss that with us and take all the time you want and tell the parents exactly what they can do about this?
Well, I don't know what they can do about it. I'm glad to discuss some of the happenings, and the reason for the newsletter on the subject was because it was quite a hot issue in California, and I had a deep concern over the route that it appeared to be taking by the adoption of what they called a CECUS, because that is put out and prepared, that program is prepared by people who have been cited by the Un-American Activities Committee as being communists, by organizations that have been cited as un-American, and I just felt that it had a wrong base and should not be in our schools. And moreover, it was there was a complete absence of morality and of any spiritual values. In fact, their program stated that a teacher of their sex instruction should not be a moralist. And in fact, they kind of hoped they would be atheists because they had the atheists do not respect the moral law. Well, that to me, I go back to what George Washington said, that morality and religion are absolutely essential to a successful political system. And the CECUS instruction was neither moral nor was it religious. And in fact, it would destroy it. And nothing can destroy the country more rapidly than abandonment of the moral values and the spiritual values. But I am happy to say that in California, and I think partially as a result of our campaign against CECUS, the State Board of Education, while they provided for sex education, they definitely said that CECUS was not a program that could be tolerated in our public schools. I was glad for that. They also said that along with any sex instruction, there must be a course in morality and in the spiritual values as pertain to sex or anything else. And I think that was very important. And also that the teaching of it in the lower grades would have to be entirely on a voluntary basis. So I think maybe part of the victory is won in California, because the whole thrust of CECUS was to make pornography acceptable in the parlor at home. And the publishers of the CECUS program are the greatest publishers and purveyors and distributors of pornography that there is in America. And why should we, the taxpayers and the moral people of America, be supporting these pornographic mills that are making so much money in California, in fact, all over the United States? And I became concerned mainly because time after time I was getting letters from concerned mothers enclosing some of the pornographic literature that they were receiving and that their children were receiving, and wondering what they could do about it. Well, of course, they can go through the rigmarole of stopping them from sending it to their children, and there's a fine if they do not stop it after they have been put on notice through the post office department. But it's just one of the things that has been tending to break down the moral fabric of the country, and if you lose just one generation, this country can topple completely as rapidly as the Roman Empire did.
True. Very, very true. I picked up, after your letter, I picked up a sexology magazine at a respectable drugstore newsstand. And I went over to the man and gave him a copy of your letter. And he said, well, you always have some squares around. And I said, well, if that's being a square, the whole United States should be squares. Now, who was responsible? Was it the California Board of Education that stopped this there?
Well, the California Board of Education, yeah, passed a resolution unanimously on what I have discussed. But they did it under the pressure of the people, the mothers and fathers and many of the parent-teacher associations, that they should take some action. And of course, there was a demand to eliminate it completely. And this might have been somewhat of a compromise between the elimination of any sex education mm-hmm. and the CECAS, which was being promoted mainly for the benefit of the purveyors and publishers of pornography. And I do. I get letters every day from the mothers telling what their children have come home and told them. And it's quite an issue in California. And I think it may be played down a good bit since the Board of Education made that ruling.
Now, in my state, especially in Maricopa County and Mesa, we're pretty well dominated by Mormons. Now, I don't use that term wrong. I mean that they're in the seat of power. In spite of that, they introduced this in our schools the other day, and not much was said.
Well, that's an amazing thing to me, knowing the Mormon Church and its high state of morality and religious concepts, that they should do that. And just last Sunday, there was a two-hour program by the Mormon Church on morality, and I don't believe they went into the CECAS matter, but I have sent for a transcript of that. I want to see just what it was that they were saying, but it had to do a great deal with the riots and law-breaking by the students and the faculties throughout the country.
Mm-hmm. The country of Brazil shows the power of women. You know, when about 3 years ago, wasn't it, the women of that country marched and defeated communism. You have a lady whose name I've slipped my memory in Orange County. As a matter of fact, she's Anaheim, that has put up a real valiant fight on the CECAS situation. You may have seen her name. I have it in my hotel room. Meant to bring it along. On another article you released May 2nd of last year, you spoke on Anarchy USA. And friends, here is one statement that I want Congressman Utt to elaborate on. He said, fantastic though it may seem, this great republic is threatened with anarchy. In fact, the threat has grown so far that the only salvation may be a military dictatorship. Anarchy and dictatorship represent two opposite extremes. The first, complete absence of government, and the second, a totality of government. These two extremes have faced many civilizations over the past 4,000 years. That's quite a statement.
Well, I think it's very true, and one that that I have used from the time I first ran for office was the fact that if you'll examine the history of government since the creation of governments, that they have ranged all the way from no government at all, which is anarchy, and to a totality of government, which is a dictatorship, and they both have nothing but disaster for their in the end result, and that. One of the big jobs of Congress under the Constitution was to seek a balance between dictatorship and anarchy so that the voice of the people would be heard, and that balance is just about as delicate as an apothecary scale, and it can move a little to the right or a little to the left. But if it goes too far, it's either going to go into a totality of government, which is dictatorship, or into anarchy, which is no government at all. And we have to keep that balance, but sometimes we don't do too good a job with it. And the anarchy that's being displayed on the campuses and in fact, in many cities where they march on the city hall, it's a government of the rabble-rousers. And we're either going to have to, and if we don't come within a law and justice. Somebody's going to come along, which is, say, like a man on horseback, and you're going to have a military dictatorship in order to stop rioting and looting, and I hope we won't have to come to that, and I think if Congress is, and the administration are firm, we may have this pass away.
When you stop to realize, as we looked on Washington last year through television, and saw this Capitol burning, and yesterday in a congressman's office, he didn't tape with me, but I ventured this: why did President Johnson sit here? What would Teddy Roosevelt have done? He said Johnson couldn't do anything. I said, who could? He said, the mayor. I said, well, why didn't he? Now, if somebody were breaking in my house, I'd let him have it. And here, the greatest capital in the world, since I was with you last, I went to Africa, Europe, and the Middle East, and everywhere I went, people asked me the question, where is your backbone? You're not the strong Uncle Sam that you used to be. And I was speechless, because in a sense they're right.
They are, and you asked, what would Teddy Roosevelt do? Teddy Roosevelt didn't have a Supreme Court like we have today, which has completely shackled the police forces all over the country. They're almost afraid to make a move for fear they go to jail before the culprit goes to jail, mm-hmm. or before he's out on bail. And they've made it so difficult to protect the rights of the criminal at the expense of the law-abiding citizens that it's very discouraging. I don't know why anybody would be a policeman. I wouldn't take the job that paid $1,000 a month because of the pressure you're under. You can't enforce the law. And if you do and use any force beyond what the people think that you should have used, then you're in trouble and you get fired, and or you even may go to jail for manslaughter or something else. And I think that the Supreme Court probably has deteriorated our police force in America more than any institution that we have ever had, and Teddy Roosevelt didn't have that problem. But I think that Johnson could have done something at the time the rioting took place here, because it was about 26 hours before the first looting and burning started, before the National Guard or the troops of any kind moved into Washington. I was downtown when they arrived, 24 hours after the looting and the burning had begun. And we have troops here within a relatively few minutes of the District of Columbia, and they could have been moved in. And I think it was just a fear of insulting people by a display of force. Now, I don't buy that bit. The argument here in Washington is, by some people, that if we double our police force and enforce law and order, that it will create tensions for people just to see policemen on the street. Well, I'd like to see one on every corner, and it would relieve my tensions a little bit when I walked down the street if I knew there was an enforcement officer with the power to act within hailing distance of where I am.
Mm-hmm. I hired a cab last night to drive through Washington, and it's not the same Washington it used to be.
Oh, no.
There was a time you could go out and enjoy yourself here. You can't do it now.
You can't do it now, and you can't do it in many cities because of a breakdown of respect for law. The idea that it's perfectly all right to break a law if your conscience says the law is wrong, and that the law of conscience is supposed to be higher than the civil law. Now, if it's a true law of conscience, I might agree with that. But too many people have substituted desire for conscience. If I desire to do a certain thing, then I have a legal right to do it. So that's what it's deteriorated into. It isn't a matter of true conscience of the law of God above the law of man. They've just substituted desire, selfishness for conscience, and I won't buy that.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes I feel like a horse with a sore shoulder when I prod our audience. We're heard now in 47 states. We've gone up into New York with 5 powerful stations there. And I thought, pardon me, I thought for a while that New York was so liberal that they wouldn't accept my message. But we're finding people up there that say, Dr. Burpo, this is what we've been starving for in New York. Now, here's what I'm trying to do. Arouse these people until they will not in anger, but in pure indignation, sit down and write a warm personal letter to their congressman. I don't think petitions affect you much, do they?
No.
Did you say that
again? No, I don't think that petitions... What we do, we get a petition maybe with 100 names on it. We write to the top man and say, tell the other people. And maybe we don't even know that they know what they were signing.
Yeah.
It's not a thoughtful letter. And it doesn't have the effect that an individual letter has. And I'm glad to hear what you say about your new audience, because I know how true it is that the public all over the country is hungering for the truth and hungering for what is morally and spiritually right. And we have been listening too much to the very small, loud, dissident minorities. And I have them in my own district. And let me say parenthetically that a great deal of the, great many of the detractors are the commentators on radio and television. And I know they are the only ones who took me apart because of my letter on Secus.
Yeah.
Not only called me a blue nose, but an ignorant so-and-so and ought to be kicked out of the country and a bigot. And then checking up who they are some commentators that couldn't stand the light of day before the Un-American Activities Committee.
Well, then you should be honored that an outfit like that would jump on you.
Yeah, I'm never too unhappy when those kind of people do, but they do it in because they want to destroy you. They bring up all the past things and they can think of, most of which have been denied and proven that they were wrong, but they still like to dig them up any time they can.
Uh-huh. Your attorney wrote the book that I put out a great deal of.
Yes, you did, I know.
And I pushed that, and I still am pushing it. The liberal news media, I think, Congressman, ought to have encouraged this anarchy.
Oh, yes. They
wouldn't let me on television.
That's right. They play it up. They know where it's going to happen, and it's programmed, and they always have to be on the spot when there's one of these outbreaks. They always catch the policeman tackling the individual,
yeah.
But they never show what that individual had done to the policeman before he had to collar the culprit.
When we saw this Democratic convention in Chicago last year, Cronkite, I can say this. There's some of his news I like, but when he looked, he said, oh, those poor kids. Those weren't poor kids. These were raw anarchists in the street.
That's right.
And
trained.
I think Mayor Daley was exactly right.
I wrote him a letter of commendation for his for preserving the order that he did. We could have had a slaughter on that convention hall had he not done what he did.
Now, one very pertinent question. I used to see signs, billboards on the highway, impeach Warren, which leads me to this. What can we do with this Supreme Court, so-called?
Well, I don't know. It's kind of the sign of the times. I can't blame it all on Mr. Warren. Otherwise, there wouldn't be these... Occasionally unanimous decisions,
yeah.
And or even the 6-3 or 5-4, whatever it happens to be, lots of them go along with him. It may be because they're persuaded by his arguments. I don't know. And it's been difficult in Congress. So far, we have not been able to get enough troops together to override some of their rulings. It's going to have to come from the people. They're going to have to demand that their congressman either change the laws so that this court cannot rule against certain things if we have a law and are specific on it. And I think the main fault lies, again, with the permissiveness of the people who have forgotten how to be indignant. You couldn't have a Boston Tea Party today. They don't get indignant. No. In fact, there's hardly any indignation over the shooting down of the of our airplane yesterday in the Korean waters compared to what there was with the Pueblo. It's just like dope. You resist it, then you tolerate it, and then you demand it. Uh-huh. You crave it. Uh-huh. And we're getting so that the insults to our flag and to our country are so commonplace that people hardly raise a finger anymore. And that worries me.
True. Yesterday, no, it was Monday, I was recording with a very fine congressman, comparatively new, and he said something to me, Congressman, that shook me to my toes. He said it mattered not who was in the White House or who was in Congress. There's an establishment running this country in spite of this great body of lawmakers. Is he right about that?
I would say that he's a long way toward being right. The Council of Foreign Relations dictates, they together with the international bankers who actually are in the Conference of Foreign Relations, dictates the moves of this country, and I am inclined to agree with him, but it doesn't have to be so. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have to be so. We should be an independent and free country, and when the people want to change, they should get the change that they want and not still be subject to a hidden government such as the Council of Foreign Relations. I've put out newsletters on the CFR and as well as some of the other organizations within that organization, and they are controlled by the international bankers.
The situation to me as a minister is rather sickening, though I don't give up. That's why I continue to buy more time on more stations. I think ultimately that the people are going to get fed up. Now, the question they wanted me to ask you, is there a coalition in Congress, a conservative coalition, that can get some laws with teeth in them passed in this session?
I really don't think that there is. We coalesce occasionally when we all happen to be of the same mind on one subject, but we have never had a coalition in Congress. A coalition would mean a coalition speaker and a committee chairman from both parties, which you don't have, and we have just what you might call a coalition on certain votes, but it's not a true coalition. It's just because we all happen to agree on this, on a certain thing, and the public apparently is entirely satisfied with what Congress did in the 90th Congress, because there were no defeats, maybe three or four, unless there is an uprising by the people and a change in membership of the Congress, you are not going to get the kind of government that we want.
Both of us discussed something a while ago that we are not going to bring up on the air at this time, but here is something that a woman wrote me in Oklahoma. She put it in the paper, and I got it. It's entitled, Had Enough, and I'll not read all of it, just a brief statement. She said, okay, we've waited, and now no more. Unless you, Ho Chi Minh, are at a conference table by May 15 and ready to talk, forget it, and you take the consequences. Now, this is the way a great number of people are feeling about the Vietnam War. Do you suppose President Nixon is going to get tough with this thing?
I hope so. I have reason to believe that there are negotiations going on that are going to phase us out of Vietnam. It isn't a type of a war that you can have a complete armistice, but when my boy is over there being killed, and then I read in the paper that North Vietnam has rebuilt all of its railroads and its manufacturing plants and is now exporting and having a great prosperity, and all that we are bombing are the villages and cities of our allies, I just began to wonder, and I'm going to ask some very serious questions within the next few days if some definite action is not taken to to bring them to the council table. It can be done. There's no doubt in my mind it could be done in 2 weeks.
Well, I've enjoyed being with you again today on the broadcast. We have about 3 minutes. If you were out of Congress, if you were a businessman, what would you do about the situation here in Washington? What would you say to your congressman?
Well, you put a rather tough question. If I get out of Congress, I'll probably be too old to... I am already almost at that point of wondering how long I can carry on. But I would begin by building a conservative candidate for Congress of every district possible, a one who believed in the Constitution and that we should not govern without living within the framework of the Constitution. And one person can't do too much, but he can do something. And I wouldn't want to splatter my shots. I'd want to have a target and go after that, concentrate on maybe one district. And if enough people did that, we could make enough change in the complexion of Congress to have some success.
I want to clarify one statement that I made a while ago. There are some very fine people over here in Virginia. I'll be speaking in Portsmouth Sunday afternoon, Saturday night, to do an hour and a half television program, call-in questions and answers. These people are getting up petitions for the Dirksen Amendment, and I've been urging them to write individual letters. They would do more, wouldn't they?
They would do more, and they should write them to their own congressman, because if there's where the only place it does any good is to get their congressman behind it. Uh-huh. In the state of Virginia, if they got all their, what is it, 10 or 12 supporting that, why, would be a wonderful thing.
We have 30 seconds to tell you that this has been a special interview with the Honorable Congressman James B. Ott from California. For your letters and comments, good or bad, write to the Bible Institute of the Air, Mesa, M-E-S-A, Arizona, zip 85201. God willing, we'll be back tomorrow with another member of Congress.